Wild. This has been Terminal 5. Jeffrey Davison signing off for another show. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Free City Radio. It is Wednesday, the 9th of March, 2022, and I'm Stefan Christoph in Montreal. This is the 100th edition of the show. And I want to let you know before we get to our interview that Free City Radio will be broadcasting once a week, starting this week on Wednesdays. We will be sharing a new episode every Wednesday morning. And I'm working on sharing this program with other campus community radio stations. Currently, we broadcast on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, and on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. on CGLO 1690 AM here in Geauguague, Montreal. On the program this week, I'm going to be featuring the last in a series of interviews that I worked on in collaboration with The Breach, a new media organization in Canada. These are interviews to look at the current political moment in Canada and what the possibilities are for activism in 2022 within the context of the Liberal minority government and also more generally within the context of the current political realities in Canada, vis-a-vis the climate crisis, vis-a-vis the pandemic and growing inequality. I spoke with Chris Gusson, who is the digital organizer for 350.org in Canada. This is a climate justice organization. They are currently campaigning for the just transition policy that the current Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, campaigned on but has not acted on. 350 exists in the broader ecosystem of environmental justice movements, and I thought it'd be interesting to feature their voice as part of this series. Really, the goal has been to highlight different activists reflecting on what possibilities are for organizing and winning concrete victories on the part of social movements in the current political context. Also in this interview, we hear about the ongoing realities of the Canadian government supporting major oil and gas pipelines that are being built on Indigenous territories like the nation of the Wet'suwet'en, where we see the Coastal GasLink pipeline being built, or the Trans Mountain pipeline being built on the Squamish Nation's territory. I would encourage you to look up the archives of Free City Radio to hear some specific interviews with Indigenous climate justice activists specifically speaking on these struggles against oil and gas pipelines being built on Indigenous lands. Our archives are at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. So thanks again for tuning in. Here's my conversation with climate justice activist Chris Gusson. Chris, if you could just first start by introducing yourself, and for people who might not be familiar with 350, just give us a basic breakdown as to the organization and the work that you're doing around climate justice.
Sure. My name is Chris Gusson. I'm a Canada digital organizer for 350.org. So 350 has existed for over a decade now, fighting to directly challenge the power of the fossil fuel industry and keep fossil fuels in the ground. Here in Canada, we are actively campaigning for a just transition. So really trying to put pressure on the federal government to deliver on their promises of a just transition, rapid shift away from fossil fuels that puts workers and communities first.
There's a lot of points in there. Thanks for the breakdown. So if we think about a just transition and this political moment, maybe we can start there. Great. So we're in a context where we see a weakened Liberal government in terms of another minority parliament. We also see sort of a trajectory of social movement groups, including environmental justice groups, pushing for, basically some gains within this context. So obviously, community organizing and even institutions like 350 sit outside of political parties directly, but there's a role that environmental justice groups can play in terms of pressuring the government on, you know, a variety of issues around the climate and their promises, as you mentioned. So I'm just wondering, like, do you see this moment as, is there possibilities in this political situation? I'm just wondering if you have any reflections on that.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of possibility in this situation. People can feel that we're in a crisis, whether their main issue is environmental concerns and climate, or if they're, you know, experiencing the government's mishandling of the pandemic, or, you know, experiencing this, the rising inequality that we're facing as a society. So people, more and more people are waking up to that and realizing that something has to give. We're certainly seeing it in terms of our base and the people that we engage with in the public. There are folks every week who take action who had not done some sort of an action with us before, and who reach out and try to find out how they can get involved. So there's definitely people looking for ways that they can be part of mass movements and realizing that the status quo is not going to cut it, is not getting us through these moments of crisis in a good way.
So what are specific points of pressure that you think could be directed at the current government in terms of the climate and environmental policy?
So for us, we are campaigning really focused on the Just Transition Act, which is a specific promise that Justin Trudeau made in 2019. And so the way we view it, there can be no effective climate policy in Canada unless it is paired with just transition policy. We're not going to move as quickly as we need to move, as science says we need to move, unless we put programs in place that make sure that we have the backs of workers and communities, because the change that's coming is going to be disruptive, whether we like it or not. And so there's a chance to really push the government on that. If they are calling themselves climate leaders, are they going to back that up with a concrete plan to get at the root of the problem, which is the continued production, extraction, burning of fossil fuels? We know from the climate science that what we need is a rapid transition away from the use of fossil fuels. So we can push them on that. And then another specific example that's happened recently is the news that came out late on Friday about the Trans Mountain pipeline. So that's an example of the Liberals feeling pressure, hearing people at the doors saying that they are upset with the continuing funding of projects like Trans Mountain, throwing billions of dollars at that project. So they came out and said it on Friday, we are not going to put any more public money towards this. So that's an example where grassroots pressure, where building this broad movement and getting members of the public to be vocal about rejecting funding for fossil fuel infrastructure, that's actually paying off. And so that's somewhere where we can keep applying pressure and win.
So just for people who maybe aren't tracking the details of whether it's the Trans Mountain pipeline or the Coastal GasLink pipeline, I think people would be surprised to learn that the Liberal government in Canada under Justin Trudeau is directing funds towards these pipeline projects. There's the news you mentioned, which is important. But I mean, if we're talking about the Coastal GasLink pipeline, literally the government purchased that pipeline. So can you just maybe, just for people who aren't following, tracing in detail the Liberal government's relationship to these oil and gas development pipelines, how are they involved financially?
Sure. So with the Trans Mountain pipeline, they are directly funding the construction of it, of the project. And the news that broke last week was that the cost of that construction has now increased 70%. It's up to over 20 billion. It was originally estimated at 12.6. Before that, it was supposed to be 7 point something billion. So the federal government in Canada, despite their rhetoric about being climate leaders, they're directly financing these projects. And the same goes with projects like Coastal GasLink. And of course, they are also putting the RCMP into unceded Wet'suwet'en territory in order to try to push this project through and try to quash resistance to the pipeline. And it's not something that they make they boast about because they like to burnish their reputation as climate leaders. They like to go on the world stage and talk about everything that Canada is doing, Canada's back. But the record speaks for itself. We're continuing to be a leader among G7 countries in terms of public financing for fossil fuel projects. And our emissions aren't going down. So, you know, the Liberals have been in power for, you know, over half a decade now, and they haven't got the results that we desperately need.
In this context, you know, of course, highlighting the fact that Indigenous land defenders are on the front lines of these campaigns and also ongoing protest actions to oppose these pipelines. I'm wondering, like, in this context where we see continued opposition, what role can activists play in terms of, you know, like through an institution like 350.org, there's many other, you know, allied institutions. There's Indigenous Climate Action, who we spoke to for this series. You know, many networks exist, but I guess I'm wondering, Chris, in your opinion, like, what are, do you have any specific ideas as, or like campaigning that you think is important to do in 2022? And like things that you would encourage people to be involved in through your work at 350.org surrounding holding the Liberal Party to account on climate issues?
Yeah, so like I said, 350 Canada is really focused on holding the Liberals to account on their promise of just transition legislation. Specific ways that people can get involved are we have a campaign to highlight the need for a just transition, and we're going to have a big day of action for that in mid-March, so on March 12th. These days of action are things that we've done. It's a tactic we've done before, where you can rally mobilizations across the country in major centers and small communities. And what's really effective, what allows us to be effective in doing that is when it's not just about that one day, that one moment, but then there's relationships being formed through that. And we're actually building ongoing campaigning and organizing, building connections among people on the ground that allows us to keep pushing. So we have a big flashpoint coming up, which is the Day of Action for a Just Transition on March 12th. But the idea of these is to rally and show public support for bold climate action paired with just transition programs, but also to build relationships and build support across movements and bring new people into the movement so that they can build capacity to keep organizing on the ground.
So just for people to sort of get a picture, just transition policy revolves around what a transition away from fossil fuels will look like for different industries, for different communities. Can you detail that a bit more? Because those terms around just transition have been spinning out there, especially from Justin Trudeau, as you mentioned, in 2019. We've heard similar rhetoric in the US around, you know, build back better. You know, there's the Build Back Fossil Free campaign. Just transition means what from your point of view?
From our point of view, just transition really means three things. So the first is putting people first, not corporate profits. So when Big Oil asks the Canadian government for more subsidies so that they can work on carbon capture technology and these ideas that will allow them to just keep doing business as usual, that is not a just transition. What we're calling for is putting people first. And one of the first biggest parts of that would be rejecting Big Oil's attempts to scoop up more public funding as part of a shift away from fossil fuels. The second big pillar is job creation. So yes, there will be specific industries that are hit hardest by the inevitable shift away from fossil fuels, but we wanna see the boldest, most ambitious version possible of this legislation, something that would have a green jobs guarantee or similar at its root. So essentially, there's no shortage of work to do on this transition. And so we need to see programs from the government that help people retrain, get into those jobs, and essentially guarantee a good green unionized job to anyone who wants one. And then thirdly is speed, and scale, move at the pace that the climate science demands. There's a big new IPCC report coming out on February 28th. It's going to be, all of the IPCC reports are frightening. This one is going to be no different. It's going to talk about climate impacts. And what it's going to say is the answer is to transition as quickly as possible away from the fossil fuel economy. So speed, jobs, and putting people first.
IPCC, for people who don't know.
The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. So that's the world's foremost body on climate science. It's the UN report on the impacts of climate change is coming out at the end of this month.
I want to just say that I appreciate what you've shared in terms of the efforts to build coalition around these issues, because there is a growing understanding of the urgency that we're facing. In terms of the science that you just mentioned, but also in terms of, you know, national, federal policy, in terms of the very urgent issues that Indigenous communities are sounding daily. So last question, in this context, Chris, can you talk about what it means to be involved in these things? And, you know, there's no like one perfect approach, right? Like 350 is a broad coalition, and I appreciate that, but there's a lot of voices involved. So why, from your point of view, is it important to try to build these broad coalitions beyond rhetoric? It's not a perfect science, right? Like it's a process, it's messy. Coalition building is complicated. There's a lot of different voices involved, a lot of different critiques. Why build a coalition in this context?
Building a coalition is absolutely necessary. It's not just about lip service. We need the broadest possible movement in order to win. And it is messy. So there's an old Miles Horton quote, "We build the road by walking." And that's a good guideline here. We can't be obsessed with building the perfect coalition, like you said. We have to get going and roll up our sleeves and just start with the hard work of organizing and campaigning. So we find in our work that building coalitions happens most effectively when there's a shared action that builds trust and relationships. So something like the Day of Action that we're organizing for March 12th. It is messy, it's challenging, but it's far more effective in the long run than staying in our silos and refusing to engage with each other despite small differences. A good example of that that I was involved in recently and 350 Canada was involved in is this past summer. The intense wildfire season was a real flashpoint. It mobilized and woke up a lot of new people. And here in Hamilton, where I'm based, the local 350 chapter reached out to labor groups, and they reached out to Hamilton Encampment Support Networks that's doing a lot of work on the housing crisis and to support our unhoused neighbors. And the resulting action ended up being this beautiful coming together of different movements where people talked about their own concerns. They talked about the specific crises that they're working on. But everyone recognized that the only way that we win is through being unified, solidarity across movements, because we are calling for transformative change, and it's not just chipping around the edges. And so we need big coalitions, however messy they are, in order to win that.
Right on, Chris. Thanks for sharing that. Website of your organization, if people want more information.
350.org/justtransition. Would be the best thing to share, especially with the campaign we're working on right now.
Thanks for your time, Chris.
Thanks, Stefan. Really appreciate it.
That was a conversation with Chris Gussin of 350.org in Canada. This is part of a series of interviews that I've worked on in collaboration with The Breach, a new media project in Canada. These are interviews looking at the contemporary political moment, the opportunities for social movements to press demands around climate justice, around the inequalities that were laid bare in the context of the pandemic, and a number of very essential issues about the future of our communities. Thank you so much to The Breach Media for their support on this series. And thanks to the other participants for joining. Including John Clark, Syed Hassan of the Migrant Workers Alliance for Change, Rebecca Sinclair of Indigenous Climate Action. I'm Stefan Christoph in Montreal. Again, we share a new episode of Free City Radio every Wednesday morning, and it's a pleasure to share these programs with you. You can find our archives at Free City Radio's SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/freecityradio. You also can find our program up on Spotify or iTunes as podcast. And we are open to campus community radio stations broadcasting the program. So if you'd like to get in touch about that, I'm at stefan.christoff@gmail.com. And to finish the edition today, I'm going to feature some music from really a great artist, William Ryan Furch. This is one of his pieces of music. I encourage you to look up his work. I hope you have a good day and a good week, and I'll talk to you next Wednesday. Take care.
Child, let your heart be kind. May love never be scarce.
You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
CKUT. We're on the air. Live. CKUT.
Make sure my levels are at around 8.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Blah, blah, blah.
Kind of a tongue twister.
Am I popping my peas?
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Start again.
Oh, should I do that? Okay.
I need a script.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
So, you want me to go through it again and actually say that?
This sounds so repetitive.
See, now I can't do it. Once more, okay.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Wait, do you want me to say hello?
I'll have to do another one.
Yeah, maybe one last one.
Radio CKUT 90.3 FM.
Are you recording? You are? Oh.